This is WKAR. Mark Lacey has reported for The New York Times as a foreign correspondent from Nairobi and Mexico City and in the U.S. from Washington and Phoenix. Now he serves as the national editor managing Times reporters embedded all over the country. WKAR politics reporter Abigail Sensky spoke to him about how he's planning to cover Michigan in 2020 and what he views as the Times' responsibility in covering a country where local news is becoming a rarity.
Mark, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
So I'm a politics reporter, and as such, my life is measured in election cycles right now. As the national editor of the New York Times, how are you thinking about a state like Michigan that's going to be important in deciding the 2020 election?
That's a great question. What's going on in the New York Times newsroom at this very minute is pretty dramatic. They're actually moving desks around, clearing out a space, and creating a politics operation. And it's going to be massive. And there are going to be New York Times reporters here all over Michigan for many, many months to come. Because as you know, Michigan is just a key state. We know why. And understanding Michigan, understanding the mood of Michigan is key. And so you may not know right away that they're here. Times reporters sometimes fly under the radar screen, but they're going to be roaming around here in East Lansing and Detroit and all over the state.
So when you're thinking about where to put people, obviously it's normal for people to be based in Detroit or Macomb County or maybe a Grand Rapids even. Are you guys going to have people as far up as the UP and really all over? And how many people do you think?
I think for Michigan, it's going to be people coming in for long periods of time, but not staying here permanently. They're going to do long stints in Michigan and other key states. And exactly which cities, I can't say. You sort of want locations that are accessible to other places. It's a big, sprawling state. And so I can't say exactly which communities will have a Times reporter, you know, regularly eating breakfast in the local coffee shop, but they're going to be around.
So going out of the 2016 election, I think the media writ large was criticized for their coverage of that election, maybe more than they had been in previous elections. Now, I know you only took the helm as national editor in June of 2016, but how big of a role did you play in that coverage? And what regrets did you have? What things were you proud of?
Right. So I believe that the media did not adequately prepare its readers, viewers for the results of the election. And speaking as a Times editor, I think the New York Times didn't adequately prepare our readers for that. I started on the national desk just months before the election, and a separate political campaign operation is set up at the Times, and it's a complicated arrangement. We've learned lessons from what occurred last time around. We're spending far more time out in the country, away from big cities, talking to people. We've been doing that since Election Day of 2016, since the results came in. And, you know, getting the mood of a country is a complicated thing. It's not necessarily each person that you run across, that you bump into randomly, captures the mood of a particular place in Michigan or a particular mood in the country. It really takes someone spending considerable time reading tea leaves, talking to people, going to meetings, listening to radio, and really just getting to know the issues of importance in that community. I think we've done a good job leading into this, and I think we have to do a whole lot more.
So when you're sending somebody to kind of get a deeper sense of a community and read those tea leaves, how long are you sending them in for as an editor?
One thing is we've moved some people permanently into places to sort of get them out of New York. And so we have a reporter who's in Pittsburgh who has been going to West Virginia, other areas around there. Chicago operation is large, and they're branching out across the Midwest. You know, three people in Denver. One of the people in Denver, Jack Healy, has been focusing the last year on rural issues exclusively. Denver may not be the most rural place, but he's traveling around writing about farmers and rural issues, and I think that's going to be important. We're doing a lot to try to tap into what is the real America, what's going on behind the scenes, and not necessarily following the lead of the political professionals. And we will still be polling. Polling is important, but we're going to bring to our polling also our independent assessment of what's happening out in the country.
I know one of the ways that you've kind of tried to build more robust connections with communities has been something called the Times in Person Projects, where you have more enterprise stories centered in communities and reporters go there for, like you're saying, a longer amount of time. I think reporter Troy Gabriel did.
Trip Gabriel, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did a story in Jackson, actually, which is really close to here. How has it been to manage those projects, and what's your kind of goal with that?
So that's a good example of a project that was trying to get around this notion that the New York Times is a New York City-based publication that understands New York and is bringing its New York City values out into the country, that we really want to understand all of America. And so that project was send a reporter to spend weeks on a story and then don't disappear when the story runs in the New York Times. Return afterwards and talk to the community about the issues raised in the story and get reaction to what do they think about the story. And it's not something we've typically done, and it's been a huge success. Reporters have been excited to do it, some apprehensive about what are people going to think about my story. It's a logistical challenge. We have a lot of work to do just to cover the news. So to sort of have events planning on top of that is a challenge, but I think it's worth the time.
And did you work closely at all with that piece about Jackson at all?
I wasn't the primary editor on it, but that came from the national desk, and I came up with the Times in Person idea and recruited Trip to return, said this is a perfect story to do that in, and convinced Trip that this would be a good idea for that piece. So that was sort of my element of that.
So that element of ultimately trying to connect more with the community and convince them that you're not bringing in these New York City values to cover their place that they live and they know, that's a hard sell in some of the Midwest and Rust Belt. I think people are naturally maybe a little bit skeptical of that. And when I go to, you know, the president's rallies and say Grand Rapids, people will ask me, oh, are you with CNN? Are you with the New York Times? No? Okay, I'll talk to you. I trust you. There seems to be this kind of pervasive distrust that even with those projects still seeps in given the current political rhetoric. How do you, as an editor, help manage that for your readership, but also for your reporters?
The climate for reporters in the United States right now is extremely challenging. Our correspondence, I would say a day does not go by in which someone that they approach for an interview does not say fake news and turn their back and walk away. That's part of the reality of life in America right now. And it's unfortunate, you know, especially if we're doing a piece in which we're trying to seek views from supporters of Donald Trump and we're struggling to get people to talk to us. So I still think the majority of people, when a Times reporter comes in, you may have to listen to a little bit of bluster. You may have to be patient, but they're going to find it irresistible. They don't want to give up the chance to talk to millions of people through that one little interaction with a reporter. it's a huge megaphone. You're basically handing this megaphone that's bigger than they are to them and saying, what do you think? And that's hard to resist. And so there's still many people who do want to talk to us, but we do encounter the attitude that you're talking about. And we encounter hostility. It's dangerous out there for reporters, I believe, right now.
And obviously, before you were an editor, you were a reporter and a reporter in other countries outside of the U.S. Does that give you a different perspective or lens on this distrust of the media?
I believe as an editor that the reporter is the one who has the best sense of the security of a particular assignment, whether an assignment makes sense or not. And so I'm very, very careful about pushing too hard. And if a reporter has qualms about doing something, I respect that. And I think that's important philosophy. And that's the philosophy that, you know, most of my editors employed when I was covering conflicts in Africa and the Middle East and the drug war in Mexico. They weren't calling up from New York and saying, you have to go and do this. They were saying, use your judgment. And I use my judgment. So it's a reporter's call. And the reporter is more important than any particular story. And we do have situations where reporters say that just didn't feel right. And I say, got it.
And kind of another element or flip side to this story of the media and how much people trust it is local news is going away at a huge rate across the United States. What do you view the New York Times' role in covering a more vast territory, essentially, as that local news dries up? What is your role then, and what are your reporters' roles?
So first of all, every New York Times reporter that I know was once a local journalist. I was a local journalist. I sat through school board meetings till the wee hours of the morning, city council meetings. I was a specialist in sewer boards in the town of Tonawanda in upstate New York. I mean, I've covered local news, and I realize its importance, and I realize the fact that it's going away, how devastating that is. I'm really, really concerned about state houses not having full press corps, city halls, schools. That really, really bothers me, worries me as just a citizen of the country. The Times is doing some things, and I have some projects that I'm working on this year that I hope that close followers of the Times should wait for, basically collaborating with news organizations, bringing what the Times is able to bring and helping a news organization that has lost resources cover a really important topic to them, and doing that as a collaboration and doing it as sort of a give back to the industry. We did one in Louisiana on coastal erosion that was a good story for us and a good story for the Baton Rouge paper. And I think there's a lot of potential in this model in big institutions teaming up with smaller ones.
Kind of related to that, obviously you're going to cover a lot of communities, especially going into an election cycle, that some people that you're interviewing, your reporters are interviewing, may never pick up a copy of the New York Times. How do you balance coverage that explains that place to your readership, but also respects that place's integrity and tells that story with accuracy?
It's a great question and a great challenge, and a skilled national correspondent and a skilled foreign correspondent can write a piece that both introduces a place to an outsider and is authentic to the person who lives there. And it takes not dumbing down description to the point of caricature, but it takes having the right voice, the right eye, and realizing everything we write, I am presuming that someone from that place is going to read, and not just one person, but hundreds, a lot of people. And I want my correspondents to send copies, not of the print newspaper that takes too much postage and too much time, but email, text, you know, send by on Facebook or Twitter, a copy of the story to the people who contributed to the story. I'd like to do that. In fact, I'm going to raise that when we get to Detroit as a great suggestion. So thanks for the tip.
Absolutely. Happy to help. So obviously, I started saying, you know, Michigan is going to be an important state for 2020. Do you think there's also danger in that, in kind of self-selecting as a mass that, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, these are the places, folks, that we're going to pay attention to?
Yes, I do believe that we should be informed by the past. And, you know, history shows that Michigan's a key state, Wisconsin. You didn't mention Florida, you know, clearly Florida. So we should keep that in mind. I mean, political professionals have data galore that makes clear that a state like Michigan is going to be key. But let's also, and I think this was a problem back in 2016, let's also be open to the possibility that the things won't happen as they always have in the past, that there could be something new and surprising, some dynamic that we don't understand. And that's what happened last time. And who knows what the next dynamic will be. And I think part of that, reporters have to be well-informed, but they can't be know-it-alls.
Right. And my kind of last question for you is, how do you want your Michigan coverage to look like? Do you have any idea of that? Or is that something that you feel as you talk to your reporters on the ground here?
I think it's one of the purposes of this meeting that starts tomorrow morning. We're going to be talking about the presidential campaign and what our coverage ought to look like. But, you know, what we were talking about earlier is, I think, important, that I want New York Times coverage of Michigan not to feel like it was written by some faraway person who doesn't truly understand this place. I want it to feel like it is well informed. I want you, I want others who live here to read it and say, wow, they really got this place. And I want journalists in Michigan to say, oh my gosh, the Times really got a story that I wish I got. So those are my goals, my broad goals. Exactly what it's going to look like, that's something we're talking about. But I want New York Times coverage of Michigan, I want to be essential reading in Michigan.
Well, I look forward to being green with envy that a Times journalist nabbed a story before I got it. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that I should have asked you about outlooking 2020 coverage here, or how people feel about Times coverage that I haven't asked you and I should have?
Well, I think one of the big challenges that we face as an institution is the criticism that's coming from the President of the United States daily in tweets and statements and comments and all sorts of forms. And that's being picked up by people across the country. So that's a huge challenge. And for me, the big worry is, can that disdain for a free press, can that sort of fake news mantra just be put back in the bottle? Or has something really, really damaging happened in this country that could take years and years to undo? And I don't know the answer. I know that we in the media and we as a country have to work to undo this damage, but I don't know how long it's going to take.
Right. Well, thank you so much for coming by and talking with us. I appreciate it.
Great questions. Thank you.